Wow.
This is where we gotta get buttoned up.
Uh-huh. This oh, is, was I supposed to?
we gotta class it up for a man just very very much intertwined, I think very much in our lives.
And
I don't
think how good a job he does, it dictates our mood. Sometimes for an entire week.
that is correct. I mean, sometimes I direct my frustration at NYCFC, like results and goals and stuff like that. And sometimes I'm like, should I be mad at this man instead of the players on the pitch?
Well, let's ask
him. Let's ask him directly.
This is crazy. We talk about the superstars we have on this show, and you know how much I love talking about the business of the sport as well. And there is no one I am happier to have on than this man, the CEO of New York City FC. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Brad Sims, everybody.
Right. Brad, thank you so much. Thanks for coming through, man.
Thanks for having me. It only took 935 episodes.
Yes.
for you guys to have me.
We're waiting to warm up, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Imagine we interviewed you episode 2. It would have been a very different episode.
For sure.
Yeah, I would have been eating a sandwich.
What would be hilarious?
Well, I would have had a lot less good things to say.
I love that Brad Sims, like, imagine a world where he knew that information without us giving it to him. He's just locked into Corian's every single day.
Exactly. I did so much research.
Yeah. To be a part of this. Yeah. One of the first questions I have for you is we looked at sort of the sentiment online about things that are said about you, and it's overwhelmingly like positive. A lot of people feel
finally.
Like yeah. But there's like a sense that you almost speak for the fans as the CEO, and like you understand the what fans go through. Is that by design, or is that just who you naturally are?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I try to put myself in everybody's shoes, like, and that's not like fans, but it's also our stakeholders, our partners, our ownership group. Like, what, like, if I were them, what would I be thinking, or what would I be asking for, or what would I want? And you know, I'm a fan. I'm a sports fan. I've been my whole life, so I know I've been a fan of teams and frustrated, you know, when things haven't gone the way that I've wanted them to as a fan. And I can appreciate, you know, where, you know, it's been. I've said this before on record. I mean, it's been tough being a New York City FC fan for 10 plus years. Yeah. I mean, it's like lots of respect, you know, for everyone, and like and the people who've been with us since the beginning. It's like, it's amazing that like that they're still with us, having to go through so many different, you know, venues and trials and tribulations and things of that nature. And I feel like, you know, we had one really great payoff in 2021, right? With MLS Cup, and now you know we're really going to be getting the real big payoff here in 2027 with Etihad Park.
Let's start there, because I also want to spend some time reminiscing, especially about 2021, because it was a great year. But the stadium, we got the luxury of being on the media stadium site tour a couple months ago. Yep. I mean, things are coming along even better now. It's just so awesome to see. The last beam was put up just the other day. Mm-hmm. But we've had a few of these conversations off air about just the work around getting the stadium. And we had Councilman Moya on last year, and we asked him from a politician's perspective.
It's beautiful. If you're watching, you're seeing it now.
I mean, it's these renderings, like, you know, they're my phone wallpaper. Uh-huh. Obviously. But
not as kid.
he got replaced. Yeah. But so from your perspective as the CEO, What are some of the milestones and moments of, like, from when, you know, when the announcement happened to like all the work behind it? I mean, if you can truncate that as much as possible, but what is what is the feeling like now? Because you even carry yourself with a different swagger.
Oh,
after the stadium was
I mean, there's highs and lows, you know. I mean, let's go back to the championship. I mean, even like on stage at City Hall.
Yeah. You referenced the stadium.
And I didn't reference the stadium. The fans referenced the stadium. Yeah. The fans like, we want a stadium. We want a stadium. I'm just like, cool. Like, you know, we just
got a trophy up here.
You know, it's like, no, I do too, man. Yeah, yeah. I want a stadium. I want a stadium too. You know, I think I said, hey, you're talking to him. I'm talking to Fazio.
Yeah.
But no, I think, you know, so there's been like lots of ups and downs. And I think that we kept, you know, a lot of things, you know, really, you know, close to the chest through that whole process for a number of reasons. One is, you need politicians and you need community leaders to make it happen, and you need them to want to make it happen, and they need to feel like they're driving.
Yeah, of course.
And so, you know, to have things, you don't want to play this out in the kind of the court of public opinion and everything that things could get derailed. You get people that aren't hear a detail and become in opposition to it. Then all of a sudden, you know, you might have someone who was going to play a key role.
Right.
It might be like, maybe I should, maybe I should step away from this a bit. So
the court of public opinion changes quickly in politics. So you need all of them in 100%. Your corner. Yeah.
So it was, which was a challenging spot for me to be in and for our club to be in, because fans want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And there was always a lot going on that we really couldn't talk about.
Did you ever have that moment? Like, I'll give you a quick story. Like I got my engagement ring to propose to my wife 4 months before that. And within that time, my wife's like, I got a job offer in Australia. There's nothing really keeping me here. And I'm like, oh, that's cute. I'm like, I'll help you pack. Cause in the back of my head, I knew I already had it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you have those moments where like the fans are talking to you on the way to the stadium? Cause you are an omnipresent guy where they're like, come on, we need a stadium. We need a stadium. In your head, you're like, I just hope they get to the next month.
Yeah. I mean, I guess by the time we got to Wills Point, and you talked about Councilmember Moya, who is, I mean, without him, this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, you need someone like that to be a champion and to really, like, you know, pound the fist on the table and go out and get the support that's needed for it. And we just didn't really have that in previous iterations and whether, different projects. And so when he got on board and we kind of, connected with him on this, and he's like, I'm going to make this happen. And then we kind of, a lot of it was, riding coattails a bit.
Yeah, of course.
And like, where do we need to go? What do you need us to do? I think obviously putting together a project that wasn't just a stadium, that was, that's a whole, neighborhood, housing, district, a whole district type thing. Like helps you get support for something of that magnitude, and definitely it's going to be an amazing project in total, right? I mean, it's like the biggest new housing development in four decades in the city. So that makes it, also, by the way, it's more fulfilling, I think, that we're able to deliver, collectively along with our development partner, Queens Development Group, that we're able to deliver these, amazing, kind of like a work, live and play neighborhood for Queens. So that's all fantastic. But like, really, I'll be honest. I mean, every step along the way, it's almost like, Boy Who Cried Wolf. Like, you're like, you don't want to jinx anything.
Yeah,
like, I'm very, I'm very supersticious. And so
they
like,
hate you if you were like, you're getting it and it doesn't happen.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Like, you don't want to be out there and say like, we're going to get this. And so like there's all these different steps, whether that was the community board or the, Queensborough President Richards or in the Queens, kind of the borough board and then city council vote. And you had all these different steps along the process. And you really, what you really need is you need this kind of groundswell of positivity around it. and then it became kind of a snowball rolling downhill where you had near unanimous support. And so then each step you went on, it was just kind of like you built the positives built on that. But even, all the way until the very end, you're still like, all right, like I'm not going to jinx anything. Like I'm not going to, I want to, until the final vote is happening.
I was watching.
And by the way, I'll be honest, until like we were December 4th, 2024, with shovels in the ground, you still aren't 100% sure that this is really happening.
I was locked in all the city council votes, and every single time there was was the vote for like to clean up the soil and different things. I'm like, man, sports is locking me into politics in a way I never thought was necessarily possible.
But the way you explain it is not too dissimilar to how it takes to win an MLS Cup or any trophy, right? It's not just having a great team and great coaching. You need to catch momentum. You need to get everything to go your way. You need a little bit of luck here and there. And
totally.
When those things happen, it's like, it's kismet, So the fact that the stadium even happened, we've talked about it forever. We're like, the stadium's never coming. Hard is to build in New York. So the fact that it's actually here,
well, I get people all the time. It's like, just make it happen. Like, you guys have the money to do it. I mean, and we are privately financing this thing. It's like, that's not how things work in New York.
It's just
like,
that.
You can't just be like, hey, we have money and we're going to do this. And like, and everyone's like, okay, cool. They're like, oh, what's in it for me? What's in it for, the community, the neighborhood, like what, like the city, like how, how can you make sure that you're going to improve the lives of the people around you and not make them worse, And like having conversations around traffic impacts and like, you know, and how late events are going to go. And like, are you going to have concerts until 1 a.m.? Like, you know, and there's kids in the neighborhood and stuff like that. So like, it's like every, you had to have like every single little detail, right?
I mean, you came before New York City FC, you were at the Cleveland Cavaliers. Right. So, I mean, you're...
You know, easiest to build in Cleveland?
we built an arena while I was there in Cleveland. So like, I had a lot of land.
What is it? You just can't build on East 4th. Right? Yeah. Everything else
Well,
in
the
Cleveland.
Difference there and the vast majority of these type of projects is you're going for public money. And so really, the challenge is not like, can you do this project? It's like, how much money will the local city, county, state give you towards your project?
Whereas here, we'll obviously threaten to move the team if they do exactly what happens.
The Browns right now are building a new stadium outside of downtown. They're leaving their, you know, and there's there was a lot that, you know, went around that. I'll leave it there. I've
performed at Hilarities on East 4th, or Pickwick and Frolic is what it's called.
Yeah.
And every time I'm there, I started, all the other comics are locals, and all they talk about was the Browns moving at that time. I was like, this is crazy.
it's wild. But I mean, it's different. It's a different kind of angle in those kind of projects because it's like you're trying to get public funds. Here, you're just trying to get, approval, like, you know, just get space.
One lot, please.
Also, thank you for not building it in Staten Island. No disrespect. We don't want to take a boat to the game. You know what I mean? We're not pirates.
Were there specific things in your previous roles that really helped you? Because I think when you got here, especially us, we're you got here in 2019. We are 4 years into Cooligans, right? Even within New York City FC, like we had to win people over, right? Like we're two clowns, and why would we associate ourselves? Yeah. But so people are very and New Yorkers and New York City FC fans are very like, hey, okay, who is this next person coming in? I just hosted the town hall with Coach Jansen and Todd Donovan, and there's a little bit of like, okay, they both passed my test, you know? And I think we all did the same with you, and there's a certain, I say this as respectfully as possible, there's a non-New York energy that you may bring and of like, oh, this guy's, is he too nice to be here? And then year after year, and this is why I think about, I remember the moment in 2021, the year we won MLS Cup, and in the first I think it was either the last regular season game or the first the home game in the playoffs. I don't remember, but I was sitting by the dugout, and I'm watching the game with my wife. And we won the game, and we're really excited about going into the next round. And you came over to the dugout, you climbed up, and you shook my hand. And I was just like, man, he did not need to do this. Yeah. He could have gotten injured, but you were like, oh,
I was pretty fired up.
You were so fired up. And for me, I was like, yo. Yeah. Brad is the homie. Brad is locked in to not just, you do all the business stuff that you need to do.
Right. It's not just the bottom line. This guy cares.
Well, that's a beauty and something that I've been fortunate enough where I've spent, you know, almost my entire career working on the team side of sports. I've done league office work and some other, you know, other entrepreneurial work as well. But really that being able to really be passionate about, like, you've got one team and like, I'm competitive and I, you know, you want to win. I want to win, but I also want to win for our staff. I want to win for our fans. I want to win for our partners. I want like the people who really care. Like when, in Cleveland, like I remember after when we won the NBA championship in 2016, the first part we had one woman on our staff that had been there since the inaugural year. She'd been there 50 years.
Whoa.
Wow. And had never seen a championship.
But just even having a job that long in one place is remarkable.
That's rare now.
It is. Yeah. It is very rare. And like we won, and I went running down the hall, and I was like, find Jen.
You've been replaced by AI. Like, I'm sorry. Like,
give her a big hug. I'd be like, hopefully I didn't want. I was worried about tackling her. Yeah. And then 83-year-old championship is unfortunately on the night of the championship. But So I actually jumped on someone else's back first, and then I went over and I saw Jen. But like, you know, because I was so happy for the people that had been in the organization for, you know, we had people that, you know, 50 years, 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, like in that organization. It's like, and like how much it meant to them, you know, and I'd been there like whatever at that point in time, I've been there like 4 or 5 years, you know? Wow. So I'm just like, hey, it means a lot to me, but I know it means way more to, you know, to people, to other people, fans, you know, staff and all those kind of stuff. And I felt so great for them. And like, I felt that way in 2021 with that, you know, it was like almost like, hey, all this is payoff, as I mentioned before, for like all the fans that are like sticking with us through, you know, through a bunch of crap, you know.
Felt good, especially when your local rival hasn't won a cup. It feels good.
That feels great too.
I felt great.
I'd hate myself if I didn't ask this, but what's LeBron like?
Oh,
LeBron. I was literally about to reference LeBron in the next question.
LeBron, you know, LeBron's a good guy, and he's a family guy. You know, he's been with his, you know, with his wife for, I mean, I think they're high school, like sweethearts or whatever, but kind of, you know, kept to himself. It's so hard. You got to think about like putting yourself in somebody's shoes like that, or like a Messi, or like, you know, like there's you probably count on two hands, you know, the people, you know, the athletes that performed at like that kind of level. Right. And just like where you're recognizable every single place you go, and some people always wanting things out of you, and so I think it'd be really tough to put yourself in their shoes. I mean, he kind of stayed, you know, kind of out of the limelight most of the time in Cleveland, and just was with his family, and which I thought was great.
You might be the perfect person to ask this question. Yeah. You were in Cleveland during the LeBron era, some of the LeBron era. You're in MLS during the Messi era. In the U.S., who do you think would be more recognizable? Lionel Messi or LeBron James?
LeBron, I think.
Really?
I mean, he's giant.
Like, yeah, not,
it's just like, I mean, like Messi. You know,
that's actually a very good point.
Mean, it's like, I mean, anyone, I mean, almost anyone who's like 6'9 and like 240 is going to stand out, you know, like wherever you go.
If you see someone that big, you're like, if you don't play ball, like you messed up.
Something happened.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine LeBron goes anywhere like on earth and is not recognized where, and I think that, by the way, I think that that's one of the, you know, I think an advantage that MLS is going to have in, you know, as we go forward and bringing more and more and more star players to this league, is that the quality of life in the U.S., you know, I think is attractive to players, and the fact that, you know, then, you know, a lot of them, I mean, can kind of live in near anonymity, you know, and in like, and even in Messi, I mean, Messi, I mean, in Miami, like obviously very recognizable, but I mean, he goes out to grocery stores.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. You know, he was at Publix.
Target,
yeah,
Publix, yeah, like yeah, wherever, yeah, yeah. And just like does things and is not like fully mobbed, you know, like, I mean, if you're LeBron or someone else, like you almost can't go anywhere.
I was gonna say, I don't think Messi, until he played in America, could ever just walk the aisle of a store and go, do we need towels? Like, it's never, that thought has never passed his mind until he came to the US.
Yeah, right. I mean, you can't do that in Argentina. No, can't do that in Spain. Like, you can't do that, you know,
France, anywhere. Yeah,
not when everybody's calling you a literal God.
It might be
a little bit tough.
All these people crying.
Well, and given the fact that, look, Inter Miami just played, you know, came to Yankee Stadium the other day. It was obviously a disappointing result, but a lot of people were there. And we've spoken to several people, whether it's pundits at Major League Soccer and everybody who works at Apple TV. But from the business perspective, you know, and I've heard sort of murmurings from people. But I mean, the fact that Lionel Messi is here is incredibly a tremendous financial boost through, I think, any time he plays away. I mean,
for sure.
What is the kind of priority and focus for New York City FC? Is it to get those new fans that are coming in, or, you know, what are you excited about when Messi is coming to town?
Yeah, well, so, you know, specifically when we're hosting Miami, I view that as a like a showcase opportunity for us, because the vast, vast, vast majority of the nearly 46,000 fans that were at Yankee Stadium for that match are like live in New York, you know, like live in this area.
Sure.
And so, I don't think that a ton of them are Inter Miami fans, right, you know. I think that I think most of that stadium, and probably, I mean, if we're honest, you know, a lot of New York City FC fans are like, you gotta like be happy, you're excited to be there to watch the greatest player of all time person, you know. And so like, I mean, he's amazing, like, and so he does amazing things, and you're like, wow, that's great that, you know, I'm witnessing this live. Like, I hope that he does great things and we win.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, but if you ask, like, honestly, like most New York NYCFC fans, I bet you they say, I hope he does something really amazing, and I get to see that.
Yeah,
right.
And but New York City, you know, and like, versus like, I just hope he has the worst game of his life. Like, right, I don't know that people actually are rooting for that. Like, you want to see great, like, you want to see greatness in person do great things, you know, and regardless of what sport it is or any, you know, anything else. So I think that there's a lot of people there that obviously want, you know, want to see. I mean, when I was growing up, growing up in Northern California, I was like, I bus tables in high school to be able to, you know, buy season tickets to Sacramento Kings games. And like, you know, when Michael Jordan came to town, like I wanted to see Michael Jordan do Michael Jordan things. I wanted the Kings to win. But like, you know, I didn't want Michael Jordan to score like 4 points. Like, you know,
give me three quarters of goodness. And then he's terrible like, for it.
Kings so, at the buzzer.
And so like, I think that it's similar, you know, and this, and so for us, you know, I feel like if we can put on a good show, whether that's from a fan experience standpoint, on the pitch standpoint, which I believe we did. 100%. It was a really entertaining game. We proved that, you know, that we can hang with those guys. And, you know, I felt we deserved a better result than we got. And it was just a great event, you know, like from beginning to end. That's a great showcase for us because, you know, I think that the tricky part about from a sports marketing standpoint is if you are the type of organization that like, we're all about the big name. And by the way, Cleveland made this mistake with LeBron in his first stint. And so like when in his first stint, I was working at the NBA league office here in New York. And I worked closely with the Cavs on that. And they had built the entire business around, we have LeBron, you should buy tickets. We have LeBron, so you should buy sponsorships. Have LeBron, so you should buy jerseys. We have LeBron, .. Yeah. And then he went to Miami. And everyone was like, "Oh, you don't have LeBron anymore. We out." And that's not a sustainable way to build a business, you know. And I hope for Miami's sake, that's not what's going to happen there.
How do you replace that?
If your brand promise to your fans is essentially like, this is what we're about. We're going to charge prices that are Messi prices. And then what happens when Messi leaves? Like, are they going to lower all the prices of everything there? I don't know. And so, it's a tricky situation to get into. And from my standpoint, in my seat, we have a chance to put on a showcase for 45,000, 46,000 people, the vast majority of which live in New York. They're obviously interested in soccer. And if we can show that, you know, we can put a high caliber, you know, product on the pitch and in the stadium, and oh, by the way, we're opening what's going to be the best soccer facility in the country. On top of that, it might be like, hey, like Messi, like we'll be New York City FC fans. So I think, you know, it's a great opportunity for us to showcase our club and our brand.
And I just want to add this real quick, but one thing I do love, because we've seen Messi play in a couple different MLS markets. And the one thing that
looks
I think
a little different.
New York, we boo him.
Yeah.
We boo him. You know,
we boo the bus. We boo him.
I feel, and this is in my head, and you guys can tell me if you agree with me or not, but like I feel like from his first game to the second game to now the third game here at home, that more blue shirts each time, more pushback on the, like this time it was like you started getting some messy chants, then you started getting boos that drowned that out, you know? And like, I think that, and I do think that there's probably a lot of people there that when he, you know, hit the crossbar and did some amazing moves, like ooh and ah and wow. And then, but then when Nico Mercado scores a Golazo, also ooh and wow, and oh, exactly. You know, and clapping and cheering too.
Noticed that when James Sands scored the header to equalize against
him.
There was a lot of people in pink shirts screaming, going nuts, celebrating. And I was totally. They're kids. They're kids. They're just happy to see New York City doing something good because they're local. Yeah,
absolutely.
It was one of the wildest. And you bring up the idea of sort of the big name, right? And I mean, Lionel Messi stands alone, right? He's one of the greatest players of all time, if not the greatest player of all time. But having a big name can help sell more tickets. You've got a stadium coming up. You've been asked about some pretty big names that are potentially on the market, Mohamed Salah. What are your thoughts on acquiring a big name? We have a DP spot available, I believe. What are your thoughts on using that as a not just to make the team better, but as a marketing initiative?
Yeah, you know, obviously a great question, and it's something that I get a lot. I think generally going back to, you know, this concept that I made before of like a, you know, brand promise. You know, we don't want to, you know, we started when we launched the club, predating me, obviously, kind of launched the club with around big names. And, you know, and it was, I think, probably a good move when you're trying to make a splash in a big market and you're trying to, you know, grab some headlines and get fans, you know, but like, you know, it didn't really equate to probably the level of on pitch success that, you know, the club or the fans maybe had hoped for. You know, mm-hmm. I think, I don't know if I got this right. Either zero win playoff wins or maybe one playoff win, like, you know, didn't really advance very far. And then when we went away from that, it's kind of like now what are we going to be about? Because it was almost like you're coming to market and saying, we're going to be about big names, but it wasn't, I won't say it wasn't really working. Like, right. You know, I think it was right for year one to kind of like get your name out there. But after that, I don't think it was really working. Like we've had better season. I mean, my first season in 2019, you know, we didn't have any of those guys and we had more points than we had had in any of the previous four seasons. And then obviously in 21, we won the cup. And then in 22, we had, you know, our second best season ever. And so we've actually, you know, I think that for us, going back to this brand promise idea, what we feel like we need to bring as a brand promise is that we are going to feel a club that is going to be consistently in the mix, you know, to compete for titles, you know, and consistently, which is really hard in this league with the rules, you know, with how the rules work is to be consistent. And people have heard me say this, but it's something, I mean, I'm really proud of, I think the club's really proud of, you know, as we stand here today, of the 30 teams in MLS, there's only one team that's been to three conference finals in the last 5 years, us. There's only one team of the 30 teams in MLS that's been to 8 conference semifinals or better in the last 10 years, us. And so, you know, like we're proud of that. Now, you know, would we prefer to have 3 cups than one? Of course.
Yeah.
Would every other team in the league prefer to have 3 cups? And, you know, yes, of course. It's not that easy. There's 30 teams in the league and the way MLS rules are set up is they hope that each team wins a cup once every 30 years, you know? And so, you know, so it's not easy to do. But for us, that's, I think, the brand promise is how do we be consistent? And there's a lot of different ways to do that. I'm not going to say that you can't do that if you have big name players, or that you can only do that if you have big name players. Obviously, we've proven otherwise. So, you know, I think that the biggest thing for us is how do you find the right people, and not just players, but like the right people and people who really want to be here in MLS in New York City. That believe in the project, that believe in, you know, what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And if they happen to be, if there are big name, you know, players that, that also really want to be in MLS, really want to be in New York City, really believe in what we're doing, are great teammates, are hard workers, you know, and the list goes on. If they check all those boxes, then 1000%, like they're going to be on our radar. But you've also seen a lot of times, I mean, over the last number of years, I mean, you go back right before the window, right before Messi came, I'll remember that, you know, the MLSPA releases the salaries of all the players twice a year. And so at the mid-year time that they released it, when they released all that, at that point in time, of the 8 highest payrolls in MLS, 7 of those 8 teams were literally the last seven teams in the supporter shield standings, not just in the comments. Like teams, sure, whatever, 24 through 29 or whatever.
And
it was. And so it's like, if you make the wrong investments, you make the wrong calls, you get the wrong people in there, it ruins you for more than one season. It ruins you for multiple seasons.
Interesting. So, and we look, the conversations around like promotion relegation come up all the time on our show and with lots of different guests. But from, like you just said, like it ruins you. But I think for a lot of people, they're like, oh, well, MLS has no relegation. So how much does it really ruin? Maybe the owner loses a little bit of money, but is it, obviously there's more to it than that.
Yeah. But if you're a fan of Toronto, like even you're like, you're probably excited for a very short period of time that they got Insigne and Bernadeschi. And then they finished dead last for like 3 years in a row.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like you can't be too happy about that.
So
people like you want big names. Okay, well, like there's situations. I'm not saying every situation, but there's situations where you go get big names.
Yeah.
and you finish dead last.
Sure.
Do you ever have conversations with City Football Group and they're like, wait, you got to do what? Because the laws in England are so different around the sport than here.
100%.
Are they ever like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, always.
I would imagine it's one of those things like when, you know, when like somebody moves on from a job, like where like they knew the rules and then they leave and like, oh, I got to explain it to another guy. Yeah, it's like the worst.
Totally. Yeah. I mean,
it's like jail. It's like, let me tell you how it happens around here.
Most of the time we're kind of like, don't worry about it. Yeah. Like you really don't want to know.
It's only going to make your job harder if you find out. Do you think there's is there a positive? Because I always think that, you know, necessity is the mother of all invention. And, you know, boundaries add to creativity. You know, as comedians, sometimes we talk about, you know, that having to feel the restriction makes you think outside of those boxes and be more creative. Do you think the MLS rules lead to that? Because we have so many conversations on this channel. We've interviewed, you know, GMs in this league and stuff. And of course, they're like, give me no budget. Or give me all the budget. Give me no cap and I can do whatever I want. Do you think that there's something to adding those rules that sort of make you be creative in that moment that give you some advantage?
Yeah, I mean, we used to talk about this when I was in the NBA, and I don't know if it was NBA or Major League Baseball, because, you know, kind of the money ball, you know, the book Moneyball came out. And so then this concept of a capologist as a role, like that became like a term that, you know, and we had, I mean, in Cleveland, we had, you know, a couple of people that like, you know, capologists, you know, guys that are like, their entire job is like essentially like going through the fine print of like, all the rules and like figuring out, you know, essentially figuring out loopholes. And like, how can you like, you know, maximize the system, you know, it's there. And it was so intricate and I would argue much less intricate than MLS. So, I'm a big fan. I'm very much in favor of simplifying the, you know, how things are run from a football side and MLS. I think that there's a big kind of move towards that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think it could cut both ways. To your question, like with a lot of rules, do you have to be, you know, really resourceful and do things differently? Yes. With fewer rules, though, I think similar. I think if you had a situation where essentially you had a floor and a cap, and then maybe you can have exceptions above the cap, like, you know, one DP, two DPs, three, you know, if you had a big enough gap between the floor and the ceiling, like you may or may not need DPs. Like to get a Messi, you would, but like, but other than that, guys are current DPs could all fit in that potentially. And so, you know, and then it's just like, there's no GAM and TAM and this and that, you know, like all these different things. It's just kind of like you're spending to a floor, which would be higher, in my opinion, higher than the current cap. Mm-hmm. So essentially like, the bare minimum would be an increase in kind of caliber of play and caliber of players than we have in the league now, and then allow teams to go above that, and then you can get into a lot of different machinations of building a team. Anyway, you could have real top heavy. You know, you could have a team say, "Oh, I'm going to get five," you know, or I'll have a team that three $10 million players, and then someone else might be like, "Oh, we'll have a team with five." You know, with $5 million players. Yeah. Right. You might have someone else like, we'll have a team with 13 $2 million players. Or you know.
And Montreal's what if we just pay them $10,000 each?
Right. Well, that's why they would say that. But that's also, they would say it in French. That's why you have a floor also, and to make sure that like you have to, you know, get to a certain level. But there's a lot of different, I think that's intriguing. And then it becomes very easy to, like right now, it's so hard to explain to anyone. I mean, even the role, like people I get asked all the time, like, why didn't we try and sign Messi? I'm like, well, like, because we didn't have dibs on him. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm just like, there's a whole discovery
list. Messi.
I'm like, exactly. Like, it's ridiculous. I heard of a guy named Lionel Messi, you know, in Barcelona. It seems like he might be pretty good.
Can
like,
you just put in the discovery for like, Max Dalman on Arsenal now?
For all intents and purposes, like for Miami, from the time they came in the league, they put Messi on the list and sat on him for the entire time. And so no one could have ever had, I would never have had a chance to, like we would get Messi, you know? And people are like, what are you talking about? I mean, I don't think a lot of people know that like Kansas City had Ronaldo on
Messi. Yeah.
And then like, you know, and then maybe, you know, so I don't know. I mean, Kansas City is a beautiful place, you know?
Sure. But that's a tough sell, I think.
But essentially, and they drew a hard line. They're like, if Ronaldo's going to come to MLS, he's coming to Kansas City.
Yeah. You know? It's not up to him.
Yeah. That's how the system works. So like, you know, your friend Mo Salah, right now, he's probably on somebody's, he's not on our discovery list. Sorry, breaking news there. Where's the breaking news, buddy? Bad breaking news. but he's not on our list. So like, he's probably on somebody else's list. I would guess. But like, you know, it doesn't mean it's impossible to get, but it
that was the speaker shut off.
So, you know, that's just how the MLS works, you know? And so I think that, again, we're in New York. For us, it's more about, like, a lot of times it's going to be about a player, literally, or a player agent saying, we want to come to New York City. And by the way, the beautiful part of this is, as we go in the future and we have the Cathedral of Soccer in the United States, like, and, you know, and MLS is going to become, already has, and Messi is a big part of that for sure. But is it going to become a more and more of a destination for players around the world? And a lot of those players are going to, you know, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and guess, like, you know, you want to come to the U.S., your A-list is going to probably be, in some order, New York, L.A., and Miami.
Right? Yeah,
sure. And now it doesn't mean that everyone can go there, because we have rules and he's spread out. And that's why, you know, you have Mueller in Vancouver, and you're going to have, like, I think you're going to have stars like that at some point in every market, you know, I think. And so, which will be a great thing for the league. But again, I think we're in a good spot, because if players want to come, and then I think that will be helpful for us. But we're not going to go out and hard sell New York on someone who is unsure about coming here or wanting to play, because then
that's the least New York thing you could do.
It is. And no one needs to sell. Shouldn't have to sell New York.
What are we convince you about New York?
No, exactly. Where are you going to get your bagels? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you shouldn't have to, and we shouldn't want to, you know, and it shouldn't be about like, hey, come here because of the money. Like, that there's other places in the world, other leagues in the world.
Where
that's the case. And that's not the case here. The case is, like, here is that you help grow. It's a growing league. Those types of players will help continue to grow the league. It's a great place to live, and, you know, great quality of life. And I think for sure we're just going to continue to see more and more and more star players coming to this league.
There must be. Obviously, I'm not going to ask you to reveal any names, but there must be, especially as the picture for the new stadium gets clearer and clearer, the names that are coming across your desk of potential players to come to the team, there must be a certain level of giddiness and excitement, because I know that first New York City FC game at Etihad Park is, I know you want to make it very much a showcase. I mean, what is the giddiness and excitement levels for Brad Sims when you're thinking about that moment?
Whew. I mean, I think, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before with the championships. Like, I'm going to be way more excited and happy for, like, you guys and all the other, you know, fans and our staff that have been here since day one, than I am going to be for myself. I'm definitely going to be happy and proud for sure. But, you know, I think that the people that, you know, that have had so much, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and the thing that, like, I don't think our fan, like, no one's going to really, really understand, like, what it's going to be like until that, you know, that first game, and then there, and then it's going to be like, holy
I can't wait, and
I think everyone's like, this is going to be awesome, but I don't think people really understand, like, how awesome it's going to be. And so, you know, that's going to be what I want to see. Like, and I want to go around and see people's faces and eyes are this big and, like, walk around.
I want to see that. Maybe
there's going to be giddiness, you know?
And like also Kylian Mbappe.
That wouldn't be bad.
I wouldn't be upset about that.
There's actually one thing that I think all the diehard. We're day one fans. I think I was like the 200th person to have season tickets.
Bricks. We talked to you about our
This is what I'm bringing up.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like it doesn't matter if Kylian Mbappe is there. You're Kylian, move out of the way. I want to see my brick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can we talk? For the fans who don't know, there was a promise year one for the founding members that if you remained a ticket, season ticket holder until the day the stadium was finished, you would receive a brick with your name on it. And I know so many fans have asked you about this brick. One, were you aware that this was a thing when you signed up? Were you surprised by how many people asked you about bricks and masonry? And three, can you can you confirm that there will in fact be bricks?
I would say the to answer your first question, was I aware of it? I was aware as soon as the very first, I think like the first like city hall meeting I had with members was like, I don't know. It was like my third day on the job before the gym. And I was made aware that night, repeatedly, and have been asked myriad times since. Yeah, for sure. So I think it's been it's actually kind of been out there for those who follow, you know, a lot of our bloggers, especially one specific blogger who's been very interested in the stadium process from the get-go, and has all the like pulls all the different, you know, public records and everything like that. So like
outfield.
Chris, like, so if you want to know anything about, if you want to know the answer to any of these questions,
you're looking it up. Like, are we going to do this?
100%. Like, what does Chris have to say about this? So as it stands right now, we did a bunch of focus groups with fans, and so part of, you know, what people really like, and we're here now is like people want to be able to see, show off, and take pictures of, and ideally selfies with.
Of course,
yeah.
Their name and their, you know, and so a lot of the applications for bricks, like these things, like you see even our neighbors at the Mets, you know, bricks are on the ground, like in a plaza, and like, and they get, you know, they get worn from the weather and trampled on, and like, if you want to take a selfie at Citi Field, like you're laying down taking a selfie, and so I think, you know, the feedback that we got was, you know, how about like we're looking at doing a wall instead. So we have and that's what we're working on with the city right now. The Public Design Commission has to sign off on everything that has to do with the exterior of the building. So we're working through, and we've done a number of different kind of designs and things like that where your names will be etched in stone. Which as we look back, in the communications, to be fair. I mean, the wording was like your name etched in stone. The brick thing became kind of took on a life of its own.
Yeah.
So apparently there was not, and then at some point, and it might have been me, maybe, because
the word brick somewhere.
Because people have been saying bricks to me for so long. At some point, I think I actually did say brick.
Brick started.
Yes, and then all of a sudden, then because I said, but I said it because the fans said
it.
Yeah. And then our guys were like, actually, we never said bricks. Like, we just said etched in stone. I was like, oh, so if you look back now at like any of your, you know, communications. Like search your Gmail or whatever for etched in stone, and you will find, because that's what we've been saying.
So that's fair.
Having said that, because we promise a brick, people will get, like our plan is to do a commemorative brick. But I think it will be like something that will be like in your studio. You know what I'm saying?
I would love that.
Which would be cool.
I think the term brick is like consistent with other sports. I remember there's an Arsenal player, Jenkinson, played for the team, but his grandfather was a season ticket holder. And before he got his first senior match, he took a photo and a selfie of him kissing the brick on the ground, by the way. This is why maybe you're out for the next three matches, tummy ache. Yeah. But he kissed the brick, and I'm like, I want my nephew to walk over my brick one day, walking into New York City FC. So that became so romantic. So the fact that at least it's going to be recognized, bro, we're getting our names on the building.
It'll be on, it's like, etched and so on the building forever.
I'll take that. I can't wait.
I mean, what, and we have a few more questions.
What a great decision we did to buy season tickets for the first game.
Brad, maybe you're not completely aware. This club legitimately changed the trajectory of our lives.
You're sitting in a room.
I know, right?
This room would not
exist.
Just
because of NYCFC.
I know. That's amazing.
It's ridiculous.
With like doctor's offices on both sides.
That guy's doing breast implants. And we're here talking about.
It's amazing.
It's wild.
He wishes.
He's a dentist, by the way. He shouldn't be doing that. But
one of the things I love, and just, you know, I'm getting a lot more clarity during this conversation. I mean, you are a very front-facing CEO in Major League Soccer. I mean, we're very much in the bubble of like American soccer news, and there aren't many CEOs that are as public as you are, and sit down with the media regularly and have relationships with a lot of different media members. But you're also hyper aware of the on the sporting side, which I don't know exactly from a CEO's perspective. I don't know if it's something specific to New York City FC or is it or common in MLS, because you have clearly like the stadium project on your mind. People would understand if you weren't so involved in the sporting side. But I think that a big part of the identity of the club is like it has your imprint very much. So I'm curious what your relationship is like with the sporting director, with Todd, what your relationship was like with David Lee, and how you see your role in that relationship.
Yeah. So I mean, when I was hired originally, they CEO of the club, and I was like, oh great, and I just assumed it's just the business side, in NBA and baseball, most of the other sports that was the case.
You're like a little bit of golf, a bonus at the end of the year, and I'm done.
And then all of a sudden, when I think I might have already been like on my first day or first week, and then they gave me an org structure, and it had Claudia Reyna reporting into me, and I was kind of oh. Wait, what? no one told me about this. And I was like, and what am I going to tell Claudio Reyna about soccer players? Like, nothing.
Sure, you could do it that way.
And so I was like, how does this work? And they're like, oh, well, in the football world, in soccer, that's more the norm than not. And in our club, in City Football Group, and the clubs, or our clubs around the world, that's been the case.
Meaning that the CEO has input on the sporting side,
because it's such a significant part of the business.
Yeah.
The player, the player expenditures and player sales and all these the impacts that sporting have on the overall P&L. So essentially, they're like the CEO, you run the entirety of the business, you oversee the full P&L, and that's such a big portion of it that if you don't have any kind of input whatsoever. And, then you can kind of, you can't really have full accountability,
right?
Because you say, oh, well, they made those decisions and that impacted us. And so what could I do? And so it makes sense. I think there's a handful of those kind of roles in NFL and be very small, probably count on one hand in each of the other, professional leagues that, CEOs that oversee the sports side, but in MLS, it's probably 2/3 or 3/4, I think, are involved in the sporting side. But going back to what I said before, I was only semi joking. I was like, the way to add value and for me is just how can I be supportive? How can I try to help them achieve their goals? And so I told whether it's Claudio, and then when Claudio left, Dave. I essentially put forth Dave to City Football Group. I said, I think this is the guy that we should be hiring, and then we hired him, and then we went through a process when Dave departed, and I said, Todd, this is the guy we should be hiring, and we hired him. So, with a lot of obviously there's a lot of input. It wasn't just let us know who you're going to hire.
I've been scrolling through MySpace and I found the right guy.
So make sure that
someone hit us up on Indeed.
They're fully vetted. Sure. So it wasn't. Yeah, it's not just I make a call, but we have to I don't have the technical expertise, right? So. When Todd and other finalists for the job came in, it's just I can judge on character, on culturally, if I think that they're, a fit in the organization. And by the way, same for coaches. Dave and I, were interviewed Ronnie Dyla together and went through that process together. Dave and I, this process with Pascal, then we take essentially that to kind of the CFG, here's our preferred candidate, and make sure you don't hate them, and if they don't, then we hire them. So, for me, I look at it no differently than how I would, manage the marketing department or the comms department. It's the sporting department, to me. And it's just I do the same things for those departments. How can I remove obstacles from you being successful? How can I help you procure the resources you need to be successful? How can we achieve our goals and objectives? And we have goals and objectives for sporting, just like we do for marketing and commercial sales and community relations and comms and wherever else, you know? And so that's the approach I have, is like, you know, how can I add value, and how can I make sure that we are hiring the best people we can hire that are great fits culturally for the club.
Well, yeah. The one thing I'll say, I mean, you're
and then let them do their jobs.
Yeah. Well, but you're juggling a lot, and you know, to your credit, like it you would think you would be more stressed. There's a certain level of calmness that you carry yourself with. I don't know if it's the California just vibes that you want.
Northern California usually doesn't get that, but I get your point. Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a you know, since you've been here, I mean, look, the last, you know, when you were talking about, obviously, you know, a lot of sometimes fans focus on like, oh, why don't we have this these big stars? But the team has been really good, and as a fan, the last, you know, 7 years, the there's been an excitement every season of like, we have a shot here. Like, yeah. I mean, there's, you know, the season we missed the playoffs and stuff, it was obviously disappointing, but there's something like, I would think your hair would be grayer, Brad.
Yeah. And it's not. I think it is grayer than it was in 2019. Yeah. We should do a side by side picture. Yeah. I don't know.
It's like the president's thing that every 4 years with being New York City FC CEO. Yeah. I guess my question for you is, I love the business side of the sport, and MLS is so intriguing because there's so many, you use the word machinations, and that's like the perfect word for it. Let's say Christian and I, Cooligans was a multi-billion-dollar organization, mm-hmm. and here based in New York, and you wanted us to-
We're looking for investors.
Yeah. Right now, we're only $1 billion, and it's really a shame we're not multi yet. We're on our way. But if we wanted to sponsor, so if you wanted us to sponsor, what is the sales pitch? What does MLS offer? What does New York City FC offer a brand? Like, why would somebody want to get involved with the sport other than just simply loving it?
Yeah, no, great question. I think that the demographics are really interesting, you know, for soccer. You know, I think it's very you know, it trends very young, and you know, brands they want young. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, multicultural, and that's, I mean, it's like we have everything the brands want, you know, and we're a sport that is continuous action. You know, I think, you know, some traditional Americans, like, oh, soccer, like, not much happens.
No, like, commercial breaks.
Stuff like that. But that's the great part about it. It's like, it's, you know, it's 45 minutes continuous. And like, for, you know, for a younger audience, right, we have, you know, you have, even though there's draws, which some, you know, traditional American sports fans, you know, don't understand.
There's draws in the NFL.
there is, exactly. Yeah. I love it. Anytime there is one, I'm just like,
yeah. Uh-huh. See? Uh-huh.
So, you know, but, you know, I would say that certainty, you know, like the time certainty, like, you know, you're going to come to an MLS game, soccer game, and like, it's 2 hours. You know, you got 45 minutes, you got 15 minutes, after you get 45 minutes, you get some extra time, and it's two hours. It's great for kids, it's great for family, it keeps people's attention. There's not all these, you know, there's not breaks. You know, in baseball, it's like pitch, stop, pitch, stop. You know, football, American football, one play, 45 seconds to the next one or whatever, you know, and commercial breaks and all these things. And like, I mean, when I was in the NBA, I know, like, Adam Silver would always say, still does, like, how can we get our, he envies soccer. Like, how, in the, you know, that's why things like the NBA Cup that they've done, things have been, he looks at soccer as inspiration, global soccer. And like, but forever he's been saying, like, how can we get NBA games at 2 hours? That's a magic number. He's like, if we can get the NBA games 2 hours, then they really can compete against, you know, soccer, because you would have to condense everything and have less stoppages and more action.
Less t-shirt.
So it's, you know, we have a lot of, you know, a lot going for us, and that's what, you know, that's what partners want. Obviously for us, you know, New York City is always a priority market. I can't tell you how many times in New York, I mean, in Cleveland, especially before LeBron came back, that we got, you know, Cleveland is not a priority market for our brand. You know?
Oh man. Always.
And then LeBron came and all of a sudden Cleveland was a priority market. Yeah.
Shockingly enough, I would like to retract my previous statement.
It's like the librarian who takes off her glasses. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. She was hot the whole time.
Lois Lane, right?
You're Superman? You're back.
Yeah.
Your price is double.
Yeah.
Essentially, like, but in New York, every brand wants the New York market. So between us, like, and then kind of like shiny new toy, and like the story that we have right now is very compelling. Cathedral Soccer, first ever, soccer, stadium in New York City. Last new stadium in the New York market, probably for a generation. Yeah. Essentially you've got, all the stadiums, arenas are new-ish. If you have a lifespan of 25 to 40 years, all the buildings have been essentially built in the last 10 years, 15 years. So you're probably, 15, 20 years until another building is going to come up of any kind. We have, and like I said before, the demographics, the direction and path of travel of this sport in the country. Soccer as a sport just recently passed baseball in terms of overall popularity amongst Americans. So you've got essentially American football first, basketball second, soccer third. Then 10 years ago, soccer was behind baseball and hockey. And now it's closing in on basketball. So the path of travel is going in the right way for the sport and for the league, and for the club and for the market. So yeah, we've got a really compelling start.
Yeah, thing, huh? Dude, all right. Yeah. That makes your job a little bit easier, yeah. Right? This is my last question because I had the honor of joining you on, I don't know if it's your acting debut. I mean, in the sky.
Right. Yeah. I think
I was
it was.
So mad that when they changed the date because of the snow, I couldn't be a part of it.
You
so
talk
upset.
About like, it took 935 episodes for you to ask me. It took 7 years for my own staff.
yeah.
To ask me.
We're showing
you
now.
It's just man, come on.
But while we were filming this, you were talking a little bit, and I want to give you the opportunity because our audience is obviously not just New York City FC fans. There's people all over the country. All over the world, really. But you were talking about all the other events that are planning to be happening at Etihad Park. And one of them I know is the Olympics. So, let people know what is what 2027 is going to look like at Etihad Park.
Well, I mean, it's exciting times because we're getting right now. We will have a major event. Booker is a full time position. Teams that own their own buildings would have. We don't have one yet, so I'm moonlighting as that.
Fine, I have that
role right now as well.
Are you calling Beyonce?
I have a list, and so we're working on concerts for to kind of open the building. Probably May of 27. We're looking at doing
Bad
doing
Bunny's
some concert
cool,
to start.
Man.
I know we, on the list. Like, on the list okay, it's just like you talked about before. You're like superstar players. Same thing. We're trying, like all the same names, but
don't
but
get
in
them
the music
confused.
World.
Are we signing Bad Bunny? Yeah. What position is he playing?
I'll let him play soccer. Yeah.
So we're working on all that. But so our venue is going to be amazing for live music. There's no doubt about that. Just how steep, the rake of the seats are, the acoustics of the building. Actually, Live Nation helped work on the design of the building from an acoustic standpoint.
Wow.
And kind of all the logistics, kind of, load in, load out, like trying to make sure that we didn't like inadvertently shoot ourselves in the foot with the stadium design. So they came in kind of like free of charge and be like, hey, like let us help you with this so you don't screw it
no
up.
No fees and, from yeah. Live Nation? Pretty crazy.
Pretty crazy.
Well,
see you later.
Yeah. Going forward. Yeah. So, but I think that it's exciting because they're so bullish on the building and how we're going to get shows there. But, things like, the Olympics, that was amazing. This idea, which by the way, great idea. I would have never have thought of this is that, they said, we can't play an entire men's and women's tournament like from beginning to end in Southern California. We don't have enough venues and we can't make it happen. So like, why not expand it beyond that? And why not look the whole country? So they did an RFP and then came to us and essentially said, hey, would you be interested in, in throwing your hat in the ring for this one? Like, of course. And by the way, you 100% should come to us. Great story. Being in New York City, and of course, just for all the reasons we talked about before, all these other entities, all these other the attractiveness of playing games in the five boroughs in New York City, you know, with great, you know, public transportation options and you know, being right there. Like, so I think five buildings outside of California were chosen. We're one of them. You know, we're the only one that doesn't currently exist. Is, you know, yeah, so right. They couldn't even like you know, come and do a tour. I mean, we had to just give them, you know, blueprints and and kind of walk them through and sell the dream.
Send those tubes like, of paper.
It's, it's amazing. And we got and we got the most games of anybody too. We got nine. We got nine games. We got a quarterfinal. So that's you know, 2028. And on top of that, we've submitted as part of the bid package for the 2031 FIFA Women's World Cup. You know, I would be very surprised if New York isn't a host city.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if New York is a host city, I'd be very surprised if we were not, you know, not hosting as well. So I mean, obviously MetLife will be part. It's joint, kind of joint hosting, but. You know, knock on, I don't want to jinx anything. I said before, I'm superstitious, but feel good about that. You know, like, you know, concerts, like major, you know, major international events like CONCACAF Gold Cup, where, you know, we hope that we would be hosting matches for that. Men's, women's, U.S. soccer, we're having great conversations with them about coming to Etihad Park. You name it. I mean, then that's just soccer. And like, first and foremost, we want to be the cathedral of soccer. But if you go outside of soccer, rugby, you know, 2031, 2033 men's, women's rugby World Cups are coming to the U.S. They want to be in New York. Yeah, they want to be in New York. Where would they want to be? They want to be in the city. Like, what venue is most conducive to that? Ours. And so there's things like that we're having conversations with them on that. We'll see where they go. I'd be optimistic. But, you know, rugby, lacrosse, American football, you know, we're going to be in the mix for lots of great events.
You know? Yeah. I mean, you got it. The grounds crew has
to. We just hired a groundskeeper, you know, come over from the UK and he's totally fired up.
Look like
ready to roll. Just started last week. Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Does the change of the schedule affect your plans at all? Or what are your thoughts on?
It helps big time for these plans. Yeah. It helps big time. So. Because essentially, we're now, you know, you're kind of, I mean, you have short off season. Really, you got 6 weeks off in December and January, and then you got 6 weeks off in June and July, essentially. But, you know, the 6 weeks off in June, July, and then maybe, you know, maybe some of May, it's like great weather in New York. I mean, it's a perfect time to do, you know, to be able to host other events. So I think that, you know, whether it's concerts or you know, other sporting events or, you know, preseason games, international friendlies, things like that, and, you know, tournaments like CONCACAF or others in the summer. I think that, like, we're available versus if we were in season, we have less dates to work with. It makes it more challenging.
Right. Very cool. Brad, I want to ask one last quick question.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were the CEO of MLS, what's one rule change you would make?
Like, if I was a commissioner?
Sure. I want to say CEO so that it keeps your title.
I do not wish to be commissioner.
Not even hypothetically. He's like, please don't.
So let's go back to calling a CEO.
Yeah.
You know, I think I would, going back to what I said before, I think I would simplify the, you know, the player, the salary cap stuff. Yeah. You know, I would simplify that because I think fans, like, it's something that you want fans to understand how things work and get into it. And it's really, really unnecessarily hard to put things into play right now. And I think it could be much simpler and much more effective and be very interesting, as I said before, because I think that different teams could approach things very differently. You could still have a lot of different philosophies of squad building. And I think it would be a big win all around. But like also, in, you know, continue to invest more in players. I think that the biggest hole in the business of the MLS is broadcast revenue. And the way to get I'm going to amend my answer slightly.
Okay.
So hear me out here. I know we're probably over time, but that's the biggest hole. And to me, the way to drive more casual fan viewership is to have more super teams. I think that if you take 30 teams across the league and you just say, let's add 20% to the salary cap and everyone spends 20% more, the caliber of play in the league definitely gets better, yeah, for sure. And by the way, we're already spending 20% more than we were 5 years ago, 20% more than we were, you know. So like the caliber of the play, even since I, in my tenure here, has grown across the league, mm-hmm, has gotten a lot better. But like the interest in watching the product on TV has not gotten that much better.
Yeah, not comparable.
Comparable. Other than, you know, a couple of like must-see TV guys. Yeah, you know?
Sure.
And it's, and you can count that on just a couple fingers, you know? Yeah. And so to me, I think that if you had, you know, so here, the rest of, you know, teams we operate in other parts of the world, essentially you have the ability to invest more in your team if you want. But you also have ability to make that revenue back, or at least have a fighting chance and ROI on that spend. So if you're Real Madrid, not one of our teams, but if you're Real Madrid or you're FC Barcelona or you're Juventus or you're AC Milan or you're, you know, Man City or Arsenal or Liverpool, if you do better, you know, if you are higher on the table, you get a disproportionate amount of league distributions. League's fund distributed you. You also, depending on how many times you're chosen to be on kind of national TV games or global TV games, you get a disproportionate amount of the broadcast pie goes to you.
To the victors go the spoils in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In MLS, you know, everything gets split evenly 30 ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, including things, even like things like e-commerce for jerseys, kids and jerseys.
Merch,
so like, you know, someone goes on, you know, if someone goes to Miami, goes to a game and buys a Messi jersey at their stadium, Miami gets the money. If they go to MLSstore.com and buy a Messi jersey, I get the same amount as, we get the same amount in New York as Miami gets. It goes in the pot and it's split evenly. Which how the NBA runs through the same thing with like LeBron jerseys when it's their same thing. So, but in, you know, in Manchester, we're like, you know, Man City gets all the Erling Haaland jersey, you know?
They're like,
so,
hey, you ain't touching my money.
and so, you know, and so there's the way the rules are set up now, it doesn't really, it's really hard to get a fair return on investment on big investments. Your really only opportunity is through raising ticket prices, like, which, you know, most of our fans wouldn't really be super excited.
Nobody would love that. Yeah.
And really when you have a finite amount of seats, and like when you get into soccer specific buildings, that's the biggest way to try and pay it back. And even then, it doesn't really pan out a lot. Yeah. But if you went to a move, so going back to I'm amending my answer here, is that I would say that we would make it more simple. We'd allow teams to spend more money, but you would break up, like, you know, all the Adidas, you know, money based on who sells the most jerseys online, and all the Fanatics money, and all the Apple, you know, or future broadcaster money. And like, and it's all, you know, so if you're the most of your eyes, you get the most money. If you're the lowest, you get the lowest money. And so then if you're like, I'm going to invest so that more people will buy our jerseys and that more people will watch us on broadcast and more people, you know, and we are able to get that back. And then it kind of can snowball, because the more you invest, then the more you can get back. And that's how it works in the other leagues around the world, you know?
We've had several, I go back to we had a conversation with Dan Hunt years ago at FC Dallas, which is crazy that he sat down with us in like 2018.
Yeah.
But it's the counter argument would be about the prioritizing the sustainability of the league, right? Because they didn't want clubs to fold. So basically everybody supporting each other will help that. But I would kind of side with you now. It's like, have we sort of outgrown that, right? We're like ready for the next step.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. It's tricky though. So, you know, a lot of the folks that like from the beginning of MLS days, and there's a number of the owners, like the Hunt family is NFL. They own the Chiefs. You know, Don Garber came from the NFL. Like a lot of the MLS people and a lot of the early ownership, you know, had NFL. And so that's been like, you know, parody of NFL has been like the, the North Star of MLS. Is like in NFL, you know, you can go from worst to first, you know, like, or the other way around. And they like to have the parody. What they don't talk about though is guess what? In the 1960s, like the Green Bay Packers won all the time. 1970s, the Cowboys and Steelers won all the time, and they were all on TV. And like the 1980s, the 49ers won all the time. Yeah. And then you got the Patriots and the two that like won all the time. And so now you go and you, and like there's a disproportionate amount of fans nationally and maybe globally that are Packers, Cowboys, Steelers, 49ers, Patriots fans, because they and or their parents and or their grandparents grew up with dynasties.
Yeah.
And that's what got them interested. It's not because there's a ton of people that are from Green Bay, Wisconsin. You know what I'm saying?
In fact, it's the opposite.
You know? Yeah. And so to me, that, you know, there hasn't really been in 20 and 32 years or whatever of MLS, there hasn't really
been. Maybe Galaxy for a while.
Yeah, maybe that's the closest.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like Packers or a Cowboys or a Steelers or a 49ers or Patriots. And there sure isn't, there isn't a Real Madrid or a Barcelona or a Man City or an Arsenal or a Liverpool, et cetera. So
and you have the added like, advantage of being able to compete in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, which then gives you those fans outside of the States.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The thing to me is a mitigating factor in MLS that they don't have in those other leagues is playoffs. Mm-hmm. So like, and you'll see, I mean, the best team, I mean, when was the last time the Supporters Shield winner won the MLS Cup? It probably happened once in the last 10 years or something like that. And so like, I mean, even everyone was like, oh, like Miami's the best team. Well, they were the 3 seed. So they weren't the best team last year, you know, during the regular season. They were the 3 seed. We were the 4 seed when we won it. Like teams, you know. And so to me, if you had 2 super teams, 3 super teams, 5 super teams, like, you know, the Premier League arguably has, they always talk about Big Six or whatever. Yeah. Like, but think about it, if you do that, but then you have playoffs. It doesn't mean that the you know, in a one game scenario, a knockout scenario or something like that, kind of anything. So if I'm FC Dallas and I love that parody or whatever, I'm just kind of like, hey, like you don't have to be a super team, just be a playoff team. And you still have a chance.
That's why I think the conversation, I would prefer promotion relegation, but that's a different conversation. But I sometimes treat whether you get in the playoffs or not as that, because you do still have a chance if you get in the playoffs, even if you are the last.
And this is, and I have these conversations with the fans sometimes and, you know, about like, you know, ambition and like where, and like, where do you want to be? And kind of like where you want to be is you want to be hot come playoff time.
Sure. That's it.
You know what I'm saying? You know, when we won, obviously when we won in 21, like we got hot at the right time. I mean, I would say, you know, last year we had a very key signing in the summer window. And by the time kind of like Nico got up to speed and something like that, by the last, you know, 6-8 games of the year, including playoffs, like we were damn good.
Of course.
And so like, you got to get hot at the right times. And I always feel like if you have a good enough team, and I always say, put ourselves in position to compete for trophies. You don't have to be the number one team to compete for trophies. Right. You know, you don't have to be it's not the Supporters Shield is competing for trophies. Right. Yeah. It's there's a subset of teams that have the talent and if they're playing well at the right time, that have a legit chance to win. And in my opinion, we've been in that position as often as anybody. The last, you know, 5 to 7 years, and it doesn't mean you're going to win every time.
No, but it's exciting at the end of the season.
But you got to get there first. You got to put yourself in that position. If you get there, then anything can happen. And even in a scenario we talked about before, that if you have a scenario where there's super teams, like it doesn't mean that they're going to beat you in a one game, elimination playoff. Happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been and these last few years have been incredibly entertaining. So,
so awesome.
Yeah. Brad Sims, this has been super cool. I mean, I know we
super
went
super informative.
Thanks for finally
much
longer. Having me.
Yeah,
but I will say this:
I will be back for the 1870th show.
I will tell you this: maybe be a little worried that you and I have so many overlapping ideas.
Good point. You
might be coming for your job soon.
No, I think it's
No, but, Brad, this has been super cool, and you know, from both of us, I can say thank you so much for. Just welcoming us, even when, you know, you're obviously in a very influential position at the club. But ever since we met you and you know, we've gotten the honor of host different events with New York City FC, and you're always one of the first people to say hello or talk to us or chat it up with us. And it's been awesome just to build that relationship even for us as well.
And so, we mean it. We would not be where we are today if it wasn't for this club.
Yeah.
And we owe our careers.
So we hold everybody who works there to a very high standard.
So you're winning for us.
Exactly.
You
know?
But no, really, okay. I mean, the club means the world to us, and we're so happy that it's in good hands.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Brad Sims, thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.